Hello, I'm Tom Wilkinson, and welcome to the Thinking in English podcast, a podcast aimed at intermediate to advanced level English learners. The plural of bird is birds. The plural of dog is dogs. But what is the plural of octopus? Is it octopuses? Octopi? Octopedes? In this episode, we'll discuss why no one seems to know the answer to this question, and look at the strange and confusing world of English plurals. But first, why not follow the Thinking in English Instagram page? Thinking in English podcast, or the link is in the description. And you definitely should look at our blog, thinkinginenglish.blog, for all transcripts and bonus content. Here is today's vocabulary list. As always, the written list is available in the description of the podcast and also on our blog, thinkinginenglish.blog. Syllable. Syllable. A syllable is a unit of speech which in English usually contains a vowel and can either be a whole word by itself, or one of the parts into which a word is separated when it is spoken. For example, there are two syllables in the word silver, sil and ver, and three syllables in appetite, a-p-tite. Perplexing. Perplexing. If something is perplexing, it is confusing, often because you do not know how to solve something. For example, they find the company's attitude perplexing and unreasonable. Exception. Exception. An exception is someone or something that is not included in a rule, group, or list, or that does not behave in the expected way. For instance, there are exceptions to every rule. Isolation. Isolation. Isolation is the process or fact of being separated or kept separate from other things. For example, the prisoner was kept in isolation for 3 days. Baffling. Baffling. Like perplexing, baffling means confusing, not able to be understood or not able to be explained. For instance, this is a baffling mystery. Tentacle. Tentacle. A tentacle is one of the long, thin parts, like arms, of some sea animals, used for feeling and holding things, catching food or moving. For example, an octopus has 8 tentacles. And finally, specimen. Specimen. A specimen is something shown or examined as an example, or a typical example. For instance, he has a selection of rare insect specimens. If you've been learning English for a while now, I'm sure you are already aware that every time English can confuse you, it will confuse you. For example, there are many words in English known as contronyms. A contronym is one word with two opposite meanings. For example, if you clip something, are you cutting it or attaching it together? Confusingly, the answer could be either one. Moreover, the meaning of words can change depending on which syllable is stressed. An address is the place where someone lives, while to address someone is to talk to them. To produce is to make something, whereas produce is the things you made. A good tip for this confusing problem is that if the stress is on the second syllable, so address or produce, it is usually a verb. English is also full of puzzling spellings and silent letters. Like pneumatic and pterodactyl, they both start with the letter P. Who would know? This episode of Thinking in English will focus on another perplexing part of English grammar, plurals. Plural means more than one, and when I talk about plurals, I'm really talking about plural nouns, a word for more than one thing. Birds is the plural of bird, dogs is the plural of dog. Pluralization, or making a noun plural, usually follows a very simple rule in English. But there are some unpredictable exceptions. Most languages do not exist in isolation from other languages. Over thousands of years, they are influenced by vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation from other parts of the world. And English is an excellent example of such a language. Most of the time, when English borrows a noun from another language, we usually make it plural using the basic English rules. Add an S. However, in some situations, a word will keep their ending from their original language. And this is what confuses people. Usually this happens with Latin words, and especially scientific words as well. A good example is that the plural of bacterium, I'm sure you don't know what that is not bacteriums. It is bacteria. Even more confusing is that sometimes these Latin words can have two different plurals. Multiple stadium can be stadia or stadiums. And multiple phenomenon may be phenomena or phenomenons. It completely depends on who is speaking and the context in which they are speaking. The more formal, the more academic or highly educated, the more likely the person will use a Latin ending, stadia or phenomena. Whereas in normal conversations and normal English, we probably will use the traditional English ending, stadiums or phenomenons. English plurals are baffling, clearly. We all know that. But what about the title of this podcast? What are those words? Well, occasionally, native speakers will not agree on how to make a noun plural. And this can result in two or even three different options being preferred by different people. Octopus is probably the most famous case. Depending on which dictionary you use or where you learn English, the plural of the eight tentacled sea creatures can be written in three different ways: octopi, octopuses, or octopedes. Why are there so many? And why can't it just be simple, like other words? Well, the problem is not actually with the English language, because there is a rule in English, add an S. The problem is with English speakers, who can't decide which one to use, which version to use. And people have been debating how to pluralize octopus for an incredibly long time. To be completely honest, you will rarely, if ever, need to use the plural of octopus. When was the last time you found yourself needing to describe multiple specimens of the sea creature at one time? However, I think it is a really useful lesson to learn. As an English language learner, and especially if you are not a native speaker of a European language, you probably have never thought about the origin of the language you are learning or the words you are using. And you've almost certainly been confused by an English irregularity. But do you ever think about why you are confused? Often, the reason is because the word is borrowed from a foreign language. And when you understand that, it makes it a little bit more understandable. And you also, I guess, understand English slightly deeper. But let's get back to our friend the octopus. Why are there three plurals? Well, the oldest plural currently used is probably octopi, which has been used since the early 19th century. And this actually follows the Latin rule for plurals. Many people, especially in the past, believe that words of Latin origin should still have a Latin ending in English. So the I ending became popular. Octopi. Although octopus is probably a Greek word originally, it arrived in English from Latin instead. So we adopted the Latin form of pluralizing it. A different option for the plural follows the standard rules of English grammar. In other words, add an S to the end of the word. Most English words, and even words of foreign origin in English, are given English endings. If it's in English, you are entitled to give the word an English ending. Give it an S. So while octopuses might sound a little strange to some people, and especially some English speakers, there is absolutely nothing incorrect about it. It's perfectly acceptable to say octopuses. And moreover, if you use the word octopus as a metaphor or figuratively to describe a business or organization, octopuses is the most common form. Octopedes is the rarest of the three options. And as I mentioned before, the word octopus might actually be Greek. In the past, some people had the belief that a Greek word should have a Greek ending, just like a Latin word should have a Latin ending. And the Greek ending of the word octopus would be octopedes. Although it makes the word a little more difficult to understand, I guess this is why some people actually prefer this option. As your English improves and you move on from thinking in English to start listening to real native English podcasts, you'll realize that some people love to use the most difficult version of the language possible. I read The Economist magazine every week, and I read it with some of my students as well. And occasionally, the way that the writers use English language in their articles is incredibly difficult and frustrating. Octopedes fits nicely into this way of thinking about English. The more difficult, the better. I don't agree with this system, and if you want to go back and listen to my episode on George Orwell's Tips for Writing, he clearly did not agree with this system of writing English as well. But you will find people love to write difficult language. They think it makes them more intelligent or, sound more sophisticated. But really, it just makes them harder to understand. So here is today's final thought. This episode of Thinking in English has been a little different, I think. I thought it would be interesting to introduce one of the most confusing aspects of English language, weird and irregular plurals, especially ones from Latin and Greek. The case of octopus demonstrates this problem perfectly. There are three separate plural options, which have all been criticized in the past, but are all used to a certain extent. If you want to choose the word that is most likely to be considered correct and understandable by your audience, you should probably go for octopuses or octopi. Octopedes is the rarest and least used option. As I mentioned earlier, knowing the plural of octopus is probably not going to be too useful in your life. However, hopefully this episode might inspire you to think a little deeper about language. The reason the English language doesn't always follow the standard English rules that you'll learn at school is because the English language is a mix of multiple different languages. Take a bit of old Germanic language, mix some Middle French, add a bit of Celtic and Greek and Latin, and you get modern English. Sometimes, depending on the origin of a word, the rules we use can change. It is not just English that does this. So how about your language? What does your language do with borrowed words? Because certainly every language has borrowed words. And some languages have more borrowed words than others. How does the origin of a word affect its use in your language? You know, if your language borrows a Latin word, what does it do to it? If it borrows an English word, how do you deal with it? Thank you for listening to today's episode of Thinking in English. Please share with your friends, check out our social media links in the description, and send us a message. We really appreciate all of your feedback. And if you have any ideas for topics or future podcast guests or any other learning format, please let us know. And please leave me a rating. We're now on Instagram. I'm sure you've already seen it, but go there, check it out. Lots of good content about vocabulary, pronunciation, and grammar. And Instagram is a great way to contact me. It's Thinking in English Podcast on Instagram, or the link is in the description. Also, all of the transcripts of the podcast are now available on the Thinking in English blog. Vocabulary lists, comprehension questions, and all of the articles are there for you to read. That link is also in the description, so please check it out too. Thank you, and see you next time.